Hello, Bonsai friends. This is Evan Pardue of Underhill Bonsai, and welcome to episode 88 of Little Things for Bonsai People, the podcast show in the year of 2024, year of the wood dragon. That's the year of prosperity and passion and good deeds and all that good stuff. I think that's what it is. I haven't looked it up in a long time, but yep. So this time I am joined by one of my co-hosts, Carmen Leskovianski. How's it going?
Questionable. Thanks for asking.
Yep.
We'll nice. You nailed their name, though.
Yep. I've been saying it.
He's doing so good.
This is the 80th. No, wait. So 88 minus the first 12 episodes of Little Things that, you know, formerly the other show. So, yeah, I've said it like 60-something times. So I think I'm getting the hang of
nice.
It.
Nice.
But I'm doing great.
But my other co-host's name that I do not struggle saying at all, Michael Lane. How's it going, Mike Lane?
Oh, good, man. It's going great. Thanks. It's good to be back.
Yeah. Welcome back. How is daddy duty going?
It's going. It's, you know, it instead of actually getting easier, it does ramp up quite a bit.
And, just wait.
Yeah. So, you know, once they are, there will come a time where you cannot step away as easily. And, you know, when they're first little babies, they sleep 90% of the time and it's super easy. So now I would say I'm doing great, but my brain feels it hurts. My brain hurts a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm all over the place.
Yeah. And so we're going to catch up with Mike a little bit more because we haven't heard from him in quite some time. And today's episode is actually a kind of a two-parter. It's going to be one, being a like basically a parent or having a family while also practicing or doing bonsai as a career, just kind of going through that. And so you guys kind of know, some of y'all might be able to relate because me, Mike, and Carmen are all officially parents. And we started this show not as all parents, which is strange, but
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It's quite the transition that we've gone through here on this show.
Welcome. Sure. Welcome to the dark side.
No,
the dark side. Yeah, we'll
welcome. Welcome to parenthood.
Yeah.
Question mark.
When there's a dark, there's always a light. There's always a dark.
There is, yeah.
But we're not just talking about being a parent and being a bonsai person. We're also talking about summer dormancy as our second half topic here. About here, Carmen giving her disapproving snicker or whatever you call that scuff or snuff or whatever. What was that word for? It's like
Now my words aren't going to work. I know what you mean, though.
Mm-hmm. That's because I said all the wrong words, and now the right word is eluding us. But before we get into that, I do need to mention that our podcast is sponsored by our amazing patrons over at patreon.com/littlethingsforbonsaipeople. Head on over there and become a bonsai best bud and hang out in the Discord with these amazing people. I don't say the list anymore. It's at the end of each episode. So if you want to hear your name shouted out, go and listen to the end. Give us a full listen. It helps the show a lot. Improves the algorithm. So you guys are super awesome for supporting us anyhow. But we do have a new new bonsai friends. I almost said best friend. But bonsai friends are still important at the $1 level. Thank you guys so much for supporting. If it's what you can give, that's awesome. We really appreciate it. Gets us some coffee, keeps the bonsai podcast lights on, per se. Oh, so thank you, Justin Rodriguez and Nick, for being Bonsai Friends this week. And we're going to shout you out, make you sound awesome. We're going to praise you. You guys are awesome.
Good job. Thank you. Woo, great.
And then go Justin Rodriguez and Nick. And then our featured Bonsai Best Bud this week is going to be Bonsai Samurai. Thank you so much, Bonsai Samurai.
Cool.
For supporting the show at the $5 level. You're awesome.
Cool name.
Shout out. Yeah, really cool name. And then, of course, we got our specimen best buds. Always get a mention at the beginning as well. Unryuin and Bill Butler of Bill's Bayou. And then our main podcast sponsor, Joshua Tools. And then, of course, I can't go any further without mentioning our editor, Matt O'Donnell. He makes us sound smart, cleans up our audio, makes us enjoyable to listen to. Go over to mattodonnell.com to contact him about working on a podcast show of your own or doing an audio engineering project with him. He's a set basis living in Nashville, Tennessee. He's in Nashville, Tennessee, and he's an all-around awesome guy. It's in the script. I say it every single time. And just a few announcements real quick. The new t-shirt designs are here. I said in the last episode, but just so you guys know, we have the Sometimes It's the Little Things shirt design ready to go with Mike's Primna. Did you like that shirt design, Mike?
I did. I need to get one.
Yeah.
I cannot wait to wear it.
Yeah. I just have to ship it to you. And it's a cool shirt on Comfort Colors designs, pre-shrunk cotton, really comfy shirts. I do need to say that the Bonsai on the Bay, September 18th to the 21st, 2025, is in Corpus Christi. I said the wrong location because I'm a dummy. I'm a fuddy-duddy. I'm so sorry, guys, that it's in Corpus Christi with Jennifer Price, Jonas Dupuy, and none other than Mike Lang.
Thank you.
Yep. So you guys check that out. That's going to be a good time. And then I also got a listener comment to shout out the convention in Canberra, Australia, Woo-hoo! New South Wales.
Oh, sweet.
Yep. It's going to be 16th to the 19th in May 2025. International and national demonstrators include, again, Jennifer Price. I feel like it's like an award center. I mean, she just like won another award or something. Jennifer Price, Michael Hagedorn, Marcella Brania. Sorry if I butchered your name. Sam Thompson and Jared Bailey.
Dang, man. You know, I think my invitation, I think, got lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, same.
It should have been Jennifer Price, Mike Lane, Michael Hagedorn, but, you know.
And Carmen. Don't forget Carmen.
Oh, Carmen Leskovinsky. And
it's okay.
I guess,
next.
I
yeah,
guess
you
I'll
can,
never be invited.
No, you can bring Bald Cypress to the land of Oz.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Yeah. You guys are just
okay.
Kidding me. Yeah,
next time.
I want to catch a flatty.
Nice.
Oh, boy.
And then we got some quick takes from our Discord, Instagram comments and other direct messages. So from Simon McBeamer, he messaged me directly and asked me during Rory Bennett Pardue's birth, did I cut the umbilical cord with Joshua Ralph snips? Of course I did. They were the professional level Japanese forged steel Kiri style snips. Thank you very much. No, they weren't. They were just
the hand forged.
The hand forged snips.
Oh God! I hear it's like cutting through like a I don't know. Like,
it is. It's really weird. It's like cutting. Ugh. It's the weird, and it's the most iridescent blue I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's
we were unfortunately robbed of that joy because Gus had to go to the NICU immediately. So
so did Amelia. Amelia had to go to the NICU as
but
well.
But you still cut the cord, Mike.
I did. I had to cut it fast.
Lucky.
They were yelling at me. I'm like, they wanted to take pictures and they're like, just cut it.
Just cut that cord.
Yeah. They're like, we got to get her out of the neck. You. I'm like, oh, shit. Mm-hmm. So then I just hacked it.
I wasn't even looking. I was just snipping
in
there.
I'm looking, just snipping away.
You need like a machete. They're like, here, take this.
Ka-choo. Yeah. Yeah. So I freed her.
Yeah. I don't think, I'm trying to think. Yeah. I don't think my husband got to cut the cord. I think. They did it. I don't remember.
It happened so fast. And that was a little while ago.
I was just glad it was over. Yeah.
How old is Gus now?
11.
What? That's got to be awesome.
You guys think parenting is hard now. Just
No, but like 11 seems awesome. Like you can like be like, all right, I'm going out for a while. See you later. You know, lock the door.
Play
I
with
assume,
your stuff.
I assume, mm-hmm. You know, play games.
I'm going to let you hold on to that for... You know, the next 10 years,
next 11 a decade
years.
Until we get there. And we're like, Carmen was right. And then Gus is like 20 years old and that's going to be scary. So,
oh,
we'll
my
see.
God.
You think about that. No,
no thank
anyway,
you.
Before we get to that segment of talking about children and bonsai, one question for Mike that came directly from UN. So they were referring to a podocarpus. Can it handle carving? I guess they're referring to if you were to hit live wood. And deadwood, and what type of deadwood preservation are you using?
Yeah, they do handle carving really well. Podocarpus wood is pretty hard, especially like old, you know, hedge cut ones that have grown slowly for 20 years. The wood's pretty dense, and you know, most of the material that we'll find here in Florida is usually hedge material, and that's what we'll kind of use. So yeah, they take carving pretty well. They're similar. I don't know if they're related, but they're very similar to a yew. You know, they're just almost like a yew with a very long leaf. Yeah. And so they seem to have that same aesthetic. And the way I usually treat the deadwood is I lime sulfur it. you know, I use lime sulfur, and I also clean the live vein. So if the live vein, I was taught that if the vein is boring or the bark is boring, which it is on a Podocarpus, you clean it. And so I look to get it as red as I can and then get the deadwood, you know, pretty white.
Yeah.
So that's an aesthetic I like.
Great. That's a great take on it. I mean, I think that's the way I also look at it as well, because Podocarpus, or the Podocarpus microphyllus?
Microphylia.
I know it's Latin names. I'm just going to say however it comes to me. But yeah, we have quite a few of them here in Southeast Louisiana as well. I know I went down to Weigert's and picked up a pretty large one from Eric not too long ago. And me and Guy Guidry have been working through it and designing it. It's been a really good time. You guys can go over to underhillboneside.com. I just released like the most recent article of me going through the second time. We cut that tree back to primary branches and defoliated it and wired it 6 months ago, and it's already full leaf. And
they can handle defoliation. You can scion graft them like you do a tropical.
Oh yeah.
So they're really, really,
they're tough.
They're pretty cool. If I could find a consistent source, I don't know, if I had a consistent source of material of both the small leaf and large trunks, I think I'd probably get into grafting like they do in Taiwan to them. But
guess what, Mike?
What?
I'm growing the regular Podocarpus in the field. I have about 400 or 500 of them.
Yeah.
And then I just got my hands on the Pringles.
Pringles is the one.
Pringles.
They also call it, I think they call it bird's tongue. I don't know if that's a different one.
If you take
one, but
two of the leaves and put them like opposite of each other in your mouth, you have a little duck lips. Bill.
Yeah.
Stop it.
No.
No, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's
good
cool.
Joke, Carmen.
No, Podocarpus, they make really good bonsai. Especially here in the tropics, you know, where it's hard for us to get our conifer kick.
Yeah. Oh, it's a tough tree. It's a really easy tree to work with. It's just as durable as any tropical plant that I've messed with.
Yeah.
It almost feels like a tropical, you know?
They get a lot of bugs, though. That's the one thing, man. They get a lot of bugs.
Is that considered a broadleaf evergreen or a tropical?
It is.
Okay,
yeah.
Broadleaf evergreen.
Evergreen. I don't know if it's a true conifer.
Okay.
They call it like Buddhist pine and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a true conifer.
I would say, off of the ones that I've worked with, the leaf and everything, it's a fleshy leaf. Like, it's a leaf. It's not a needle. So I would just say broadleaf evergreen.
Yeah, but I guess, yeah.
It's conifer. Yep.
Oh.
It is conifer.
Venus of conifer.
Wow. Yeah.
Thanks, Google.
Yeah.
I saw.
Yeah, that's cool. I didn't realize it was a conifer.
But I
thought it was just one of those, you know, whatever.
The leaf has like a vein in it too, which is weird to me, but I don't know. I mean, it's a conifer. It's got like the wood and the way that the exterior, like the bark and everything grows, it feels very conifer like.
Yeah, and it does have that cypressy vibe to the bark and trunk and stuff.
Yeah,
they have fleshy berry like cones that birds like to eat.
The fruit on them is awesome. Yeah, they got really cool little flowers, and the fruit looks like a little olive thing. It's like
it is cool.
That does sound like a U.
I seriously think they're related. I don't want to say that because I don't know, but
they're very close.
My own vibe is that they're very similar.
Mm-hmm. If you graft the Pringles onto them, you would almost not be able to tell the difference.
Oh, I know. That's what I want to do. I want to make
a
tropical
U. Then it'd
be
so crunchy and delicious.
I do. I want to make a tropical U. I really have always really liked U's. I've always been a little obsessed with them, and that would be cool.
I've always liked you as well, Mike. Next question. So Kyle Purvis messaged and said that they liked our critique on the truck display, the little larch in the truck.
Oh, sweet.
And I was wondering what we would feel about a bald cypress in a boat, like in a pirog. You know, this one was directed at me, but y'all can just talk about it. I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
It's kind of in the same category as like op art kind of bonsai. But at the same time, I've been asked this question so many times that I'm at the same time, I'm like, people can ask me if they're like, they ask me as if I'm going to get offended by it. And I'm like, then show me a good one then. You know, like, I wouldn't be opposed to it.
I'd love to see it. please put a bald side person about.
And a P-Rog. You know what a P-Rog
is,
Farm?
What's a P-Rog? No.
Oh, you don't know what a P-Rog is either? It's like the little, it's not a rowboat, but it's like a, it looks like, it's like a cross between a canoe and a rowboat in Southeast Louisiana. We use it to like jump over logs easy because the way it's designed, because it's so much crap down here to navigate through in the swamps. But yeah, we call it a P-Rog. It's like, they also call it like the Cajun Navy boat down here.
You know what's funny is like, I like to think that I'm pretty traditional, quote unquote, or like neo-traditional, whatever you want to call it. But I was recently just looking through a book of Japanese pots, and I've even seen them in person. And like Bunzan is a real famous artist, potter in Japan, and he makes boat pots. And
yeah, I've seen boat pots before. Yeah,
yeah. There's boat pots, and there's gourd pots. You know, there's and when you really get into like the depths of Japanese pottery and stuff like that, there's some weird stuff. So I was seeing some stuff that's like Pacific Bonsai Expo level, kind of odd stuff. You know, like I saw a pot recently with like nails in it, and this is like traditional Japanese, you know, old Japanese stuff. So it's weird.
I think that, you know, it's one of those things where it may not be judged as a traditional bonsai or as a traditional display would be. But I think it would be one of those things that adds some silliness and fun to a display or to a show. So I'm like, try it. Why not?
You know,
it's
hilarious. You know what I also think too about like I've been thinking about this a lot is like the rules and the conventions. Like if you show a tree and I show it in traditional conventional form,
I'm gonna drop
then really what I'm doing is playing it safe. You know, like I don't want to be poorly critiqued. I want to be like positively critiqued. But am I really moving the game forward at all or growing the art at all? I think that the risk takers are the ones that, for better or worse, you know, deal with moving the art forward. And I think that those people that are willing to open themselves up for critique and willing to like go against the norm, there's going to be people that aren't going to like it. And unfortunately for me, I want everybody to like it. So, you know, it's I tend to play it safer than others, you know, not a huge risk taker as far as my trees go. But I do applaud people who have thick-skinned enough to do it and are willing to go out there and be like, you know what, for better or worse, this is my image of it. And that's pretty cool. So
I saw when Young Choi was doing a presentation in Portland, I think it was last year, she had a picture of one of her kusumono, and it was a little strawberry in a boat pot. And you know how the strawberries put out runners?
Yeah.
Well, you know, she had the runner then potted in a smaller boat behind the big boat.
Oh, that's cool.
And then another runner behind that in an even littler boat.
So
and I was
awesome.
Like, oh my God, that's
See,
like...
that's genius. Yeah.
Yeah, it's perfect. So...
yeah, that's very
like,
cool.
That's one of those things where, you know, it's a little bit silly and it's a little bit not traditional, but it works and it just brings so much joy to the art, I think.
And I think that could be judged effectively. I mean,
I think honestly.
that could, that's one of that's the kind of move that I'm talking about where I will now think of that. I saw a guy do a windswept tree with a little guy holding a kite. His tenpai was a little man holding a kite.
I love it.
You know, that I thought that was a great composition. That was like a great way to kind of be contemporary and you know, I don't know. So I do like the idea of stepping outside the boundaries to some degree. I think going too far, like especially if you don't know the art yet, if you're new, I think what the Japanese feel, this is my assumption, is that it's almost like pretension if you are trying to like put your identity on something you don't even really understand yet. You know, so I think it's still important to learn fundamentals, learn tradition. But when you're kind of, I guess, feel comfortable, then take the risks, you know.
For sure.
Yeah. In fact, I'm thinking about, I mean, because there's the boat shaped pot that was, I was going to get the exact name on that. Mike's seen it before, but Carmen, if you look at the chat on whatever, I put it in both of them. Bunzan, I think it's
Bunzan.
You guys go look it up on Google. It's It's been done before. I'm considering on asking like Byron Myrick or Rob Sheldon to like make me something that is very much a boat, you know, like a good sized one. I mean, because why not lean into it? So have fun. Like Mike's saying, like there's a place for it. It could be judged a certain way. It's just got to be sophisticated
tasteful.
Enough.
I think it's just got to be tasteful. I think ultimately, like one of the things with Laurent and like his.
Reference to Laurent. You could tell
exactly. It's got to be tasteful. I mean, like I wouldn't like Cosmic Bonsai if I would have saw somebody do that and just go get like a figurine from Toys R Us and put it up next to the tree. I would have thought that's so tacky. You know, but the fact that every part of the display is like a little piece of art and it's all high level, and you know, I really think that does kind of make a difference. So
yeah.
I think finding a way to make it sophisticated, like you said, is really useful.
Yeah, make everything handcrafted or very thoughtful.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, have fun. Tell a story. You know, like, I feel like we're repeating ourselves on some of the previous ideas from just referencing Cosmic and stuff. I mean, it comes up in almost every episode now, but...
Does it really? Yeah. I haven't been here, so...
The impact. No, don't worry about that. We've been here all along. Anyway, so let's go on to the topics at hand on this episode, which our first one, we can kind of talk about it as long as we need to or as little as we need to, because I feel like being in a nuclear family or being a single parent or whatever, and then also trying to practice bonsai at a high level or trying to practice bonsai at all, you know, it can be really challenging. And now that we all have these experiences and Carmen's got a decade's worth of experience on us, so she can just laugh at me and Mike as we talk. But also summer dormancy is going to be our second half of this. So make sure we leave some room for that, because I know there's some controversial hot takes on that as well. So,
all right.
But, so being a parent and doing bonsai, I never thought we'd get to this, but here we are.
Here we are.
So Mike, what's your two cents on it to kind of get us started?
I think it's like the hardest thing I've had to figure out so far, juggling and balancing everything. And what's the words? We're just now starting to find like a balance of what works and how it's going to work. But it's been incredibly difficult. It's been incredibly difficult to keep the trees worked to a high level. It's been incredibly difficult to run the business, you know, keep up. The hardest thing's been keeping up with communication, you know, correspondence and stuff like that has been incredibly difficult because I'm just so scatterbrained now. Honestly, like I used to be so prepared before programs and everything like that. And now I feel like a lot of times I'm planning late, you know, things are kind of falling kind of together at the last minute and I'm not able to promote things the way I want to. And so it just feels very chaotic at the moment. But it's worth it. It's, you know, we're at that stage now. We're at the 6.5 month mark where she's laughing all the time. She's super happy when I get home. When I got home from a 2-week trip, she was like ecstatic, which was really good feeling.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that it makes it all worth it. And I know it will get better in a lot of ways. And already Lisa and I have like kind of worked out, we're starting to work out a system where I have time to work on the trees at a lot of times. And that's going to be very important. You know, I think having a schedule is going to be very, very important to keep the trees worked.
Yeah. And so like Mike is kind of like my future in a way, because you're 6 months in. And I'm 2 weeks and almost pretty much 3 weeks in with little baby Rory.
How are you sleeping?
Off and on.
Yeah.
We usually put Rory down at somewhere around 9 to 10 o'clock, depending on how he's feeling. So usually the pacing for feeding and stuff, we're trying to get into where it's like around, I think we put him down for 9. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning, maybe.
You're getting
that's pretty
two?
Good.
Yeah, that's
but,
pretty good. You're
oh,
lucky.
Don't worry, he'll but. Regress.
Yeah, he exactly. will regress. Yeah, for sure. Oh yeah, he thinks he's in the clear.
Yeah.
No, I already know because he's gone through a growth spurt the past few days, and he eats every hour on the hour.
So
yeah, but just wait till he's also like, you'll get him to where he's, you're used to when he sleeps and how long he sleeps for and stuff like that.
It.
And yep. Then all of a sudden he'll be awake all day one day and you'll be like, what?
Oh yeah. And he did that. Yeah. He did that a couple of days ago where we were like on a schedule and then he just barely slept.
Yeah.
Cause he was waking up. He would maybe take like a 5 minute nap and then he was rooting.
I hated that. That was so bad. Yeah.
Go back to sleep.
Yeah. Right now, like, this is
that doesn't count as a nap. That was 5 minutes.
Yeah. You got to go back to sleep. right now, like when the baby is sleeping for nap time, you should see the looks we give each other if like one of us drops something on the ground or anything like that.
We were doing that earlier today too.
You drop a pen and you're.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So now, like right now she's putting the baby down for a nap, so I'll probably have to like keep it down a little bit. But
yeah, Mike, don't get so rowdy.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Chill out, man.
Like we call her the tiny tyrant because like I seriously feel like she runs the show. Like I'm so afraid of her. Afraid of her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez, dude.
That's right.
Well, we'll get some light in this dark really quick. Whenever I got Rory home, I'm thinking about like this is going to like bonsai and career versus like being able to think about life from a family perspective now, because it changes everything as soon as you get home.
It does.
And then you get scared. Like I don't know, I got scared where I'm like, is being a bonsai guy enough? You know, like it's just like this. It's that weird feeling. It's like providing and doing all that stuff. And
100%.
Me and Caitlin talked it over and she's like, you're in the right place. We're doing really well. This is what we need to do. Don't worry about, you know, being able to do things that you would have to. Just be a good father, you know, and that stuff, that stuff really hits you in the feels. And then I'm just going to be a man and admit I've had some crying. Some acceptance. But like,
oh, you did.
Yeah,
I'm surprised. Like usually, I think it hit me like 48 hours afterwards. But like after she was born, so I'm not shocked that I don't know. It's like a coming to Jesus thing. You'll reanalyze your whole childhood as well.
Oh
you're
yeah.
Think about like everything that
you know, your dad and your mom said to you. And...
Exactly. 100%. 100%. Yeah. So it's gonna be it's a wild ride and. It's crazy. You know, I know there's just more in store. We're at the very beginning of it. So it's wild.
I think to your point, Evan, about is bonsai enough? Something I've learned over time is that I think it's more important for them to see you doing something you love and enjoy.
100%.
And, you know, giving of yourself more than providing. I mean, of course, providing financial stability and, you know, all of their meeting all their needs is like super important. But if you can do that in a way where, you know, you're doing something you love and showing them that that's more valuable than having, you know, extra money, you know, coming in everywhere for everything.
Whatever career is considered to be, like work all day, work all night kind of career.
Yeah,
we're taking a slightly different path. We're taking like the Southeast Asian approach where like you send all the money home that you make.
Yeah.
You know, you got to support mom and dad.
Any of the money
is a house.
Yeah.
You know, mom and dad need a house.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to bank on, I mean, Rory is going to be a handsome man. So I'm banking on that he's going to be handsome and successful.
He's going to marry rich. So.
And then, exactly. Well, yeah.
Listen, just don't think he's going to cure cancer because Amelia will have already done that 6 months before.
Sorry, I wasn't making any assumptions. I was just hoping that my kid would take care of me.
No, I know. I'm teasing. But we always joke. I'm like, so do you think she'll have time to cure cancer in between movie roles?
Movie roles? That's what I was hoping. Like, that's like that that one joke. It was like from Family Guy where that joke was like, Hollywood kid, just think. Yeah. Have more kids so you can have a Hollywood kid. That's kind of how I feel sometimes. Hey.
I got to step out for just 1 second. I got to go put the baby down. She's
no,
not,
you're fine.
Not doing good. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
right,
fine.
Hang on.
That's what this episode's all about. So, but yeah, like balancing bonsai life and parent life. And one of the things I wanted to say while Mike steps away and we'll have Carmen riff on it a little bit, from her perspective, because obviously you have quite an amount of experience in it. Mm-hmm. But like being a parent now makes the bonsai part feel so much more. I had a good word for it the other day where I look at the trees and the work that I've done, and it feels like all that time that was put into it, like the valuable time was well like spent. Like it's like mm-hmm. so much more precious now.
Mm-hmm.
So the trees are like, oh, this is what time means when you mm-hmm. put into this, you know, because this is yeah. a really time oriented thing, because now you think about a child growing up and then you get like that cross reference. You're like, yeah, obviously my human child's life is the most important thing to me. Mm-hmm. And then you were like looking at bonsai and you're like, I've raised these things. And so mm-hmm. like that really changed my perspective on that. That was something that hit me when I was at the home. I was at my house watering my trees the day after Rory got home from the hospital. I was like, all this is so much sweeter now.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, so while we're waiting for Mike to come back, we'll talk a little bit more about parenting and bonsai with this part with you, Carmen. So you're like you said, your son's 11, and
mm-hmm.
And one of the funny things is that when I first heard your voice on podcast, you were on Bonsai Wire talking with Sam about mm-hmm. Purple Hut Society, and you guys were kind of going on and saying stuff about being a mother and also choosing bonsai as a passion and a career. So I've heard a little bit of the stuff that you said on that. So I think that was a little while ago I heard that episode too.
Yeah, it was a couple of, I think it was a couple of years ago already. Time is like flying.
Oh, I know, right?
Yeah, it's I mean, I guess for me my experience has been a little bit different because, you know, when I had Gus, I was working for the university, so you know, it was a 9-to-5. I could still take vacation. I still had time off. He went to daycare. And so it was like, we had a schedule, but it was kind of normal. I didn't really have trees of my own. It was work. And so, but since apprenticing, that has been really difficult because it's not just a 9-to-5 out of the house. It's here in the house all the time. And especially I found during summer or, you know, days off where he's still home, but I still have to work. It's particularly hard because, you know, he wants to spend time with me, but I have to take care of the trees. And there's a lot of times, you know, that we can't do as much stuff on the weekends because I have to be here to water the trees, or uh-huh. we can't do as many vacations right now because I have to manage the garden. And so I'm looking forward to that shifting again when I go back to the university this fall, and that's one of the reasons I think I've mm. chosen to go back instead of starting my own whole collection or garden or business or whatever. I'll still do some of that stuff on the side, but having a 9-to-5 where I can like actually put it down and walk away whenever I need to is something that I want to, you know, be there for him for the rest of his childhood, because I mean, he's 11, so we've got, you know, his teenage years, and then, you know, after that he'll be on his own, and I can, you know, if I want to go off and do my own thing, cool. But right now, especially because I've spent, you know, 3.5 years doing this, and you know, I moved him across the whole country, and now the trees kind of come, I mean, he comes first, of course, but you know, if right. it's just a normal day, I have to put the trees, I have to water the trees. Like there's nobody else who's going to do it. I have to take care of this first. So being able to not do that for a while, I think will be really nice to be able to really put him first again. And so I am looking forward to that. That's probably been the hardest part is, you know, having to say, well, I can't do this. I have to go take care of the trees, or I can't play Minecraft tonight. I have to go finish this tree for tomorrow, or, you know, like it's,
yeah.
So that's been really hard, but,
that's, I think I agree with you. Is like, right at this point right now, what I would really love is to have, like a curatorship or something mm-hmm. where I just report for duty and, mm-hmm. you know, because it is right now I'm traveling so much, and, it's really hard on Lisa. Lisa's working mm-hmm. from home and she's watching the baby at the same time and watering the trees while I'm gone and taking care of our cats. And
that's, yeah, it's a lot. So it's really hard.
And, you know, so it's hard being away. So ideally that would be the best, you know, but mm-hmm. unfortunately, like most of our income, you know, the big paydays come from these trips, and, mm-hmm.
So you gotta do them, yeah.
Gotta do them for now. And, but I'm hoping, you know, that our situation will improve. And I've thought about kind of maybe when I get there, I don't want to have a nursery, but I would like to be able to teach classes at a venue I own, you know, something like that. And so I don't know. I don't know how we'll get there, but we're working on it.
Yeah. And it'll change and it'll shift. And I mean, and now that he's going to be, now that he's old enough to appreciate traveling too, like I am excited to do some of these trips and presentations and stuff across the country because he'll be old enough to come along if, you know, like for Say Bonsai next year, it's going to coordinate with spring break. So maybe he can come and then we can do a trip to New Orleans too, you know, and he's always wanted to go to New Orleans. So I'm going to try to time some of the travel with his breaks so that, you know, he can see more stuff too. So there is that benefit to having travel as part of your job. It just, you know, it kind of comes later. You're still in the baby stage. It's like, you're just trying to survive.
Trying to survive. That's what it is. It's, it's survival right now. And it's, you know, it is hard. It's hard being away. It's cool. Mm-hmm. I love to travel, but it is hard being away. And I know it's especially hard on Lisa and stuff like that. And there's certain things I don't want to miss, you know, there's, I don't want to come home after 2 weeks and be like, oh, she learned this, this, this while you were gone. I mean, that's, you know, feel terrible like that. So
that's why with Underhill, me and Doug had an agreement. And I told this to you the other day, Mike.
Yeah.
Is that, If something's going on with Rory, if we're going to a doctor's appointment or, you know, he's got something going on, like right now he's going through his growth spurts and stuff and he's sleeping less and we got, obviously there's transitions happening. I'll take the time I need. I'll work from home. I mean, that's one of the things about with Bonsai, you can work from home depending on the situation, like you said, with how things are going with you, Mike, and I really hope the best for you, buddy, and I think it's easier with that, with the traveling part too. But yeah, it feels like right now for Bonsai versus, being in a family unit like this, it's always organize all your family things first, like baby comes first, do all these things that you need to do. And then when things are settled, it's time for work. Cause we have to work, you know?
Yep.
So you
got to work, and you'll find that you have to make sacrifices. And like, Lisa and I had a conversation the other day that realistically, like, I might have to travel more for another couple of years and, you know, do whatever we have to do to kind of get ahead. And I don't know. It's not something I want to do, but I see how people get stuck in a hard place, a rock in a hard place. It's like, you don't really have a good decision. You got to make the money. And you can't do that sitting around at home, you know, watching the baby. So it's hard, but it's been really, really awesome though. Like I said, and, it's life changing. You know, I feel like I probably, how do I word this? Like, I think every 2 weeks I feel like a new person.
Oh, I was about to say like every day I wake up, I feel the rewards from the previous day.
You will feel that too, but you'll also feel like things will just change so much, and like you'll think about it one way and then that'll change, and like, I don't know, it's just been a wild ride as far as like your perceptions of parenthood and stuff and how that grows with the child, you know. It's I thought I loved her when she was born. She's like just awesome now. She's just insane. Insane. Seeing her smile. Wait until you see him smile at you.
That's what I was about to say.
Yeah.
I was about to say, like, yes, I love Rory. And I, like, when he first got him home, I couldn't stop looking at him. Caitlin and me were like, she was like, let me hold him. I'm like, no, I'm holding him right now. It's kind of like this back and forth kind of thing.
Yeah.
She's like, but I'm feeding him. I'm like, oh, well, that's right. But like, we're excited to see him smile, laugh, interact, engage and stuff. But at the same time, we're sad to see that infant like that. I mean, that newborn stage go into infant. Stage.
Sure. Were too, and like there were times, like I know it was hard for Lisa to like get rid of some of the infant clothes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And but now we are in such a good place with her, you know, it's like I wouldn't trade it for anything. Like she's just coming into her own little personality. So now you know, she's so funny. I mean, she does such funny things. And yeah. Yeah, and just the laughing. That's the best part, you know, when you can get them to laugh so much.
Yeah.
They're the best audience, Evan.
That's the best audience. That's what I'm hoping is, like, will my kid give a shit that I do bonsai?
Well, you can't pay attention to everything else. One thing I will caution against is I have heard, I won't, you know, say names or anything, but I have heard that I was just talking with somebody and they said that they were not into bonsai specifically because when they were kids, they were kind of tortured with it. You know, like had to lug a lot of the trees and to like do a lot of the work and the like schlepping and stuff for the trees. And that really gave them a not a good taste in their mouth for bonsai. So I think that's something I'm going to avoid doing is, you know, having her, like forcing her to help me. If she wants to help me, that's fine. But I'm not going to be like, hey, you have to come move trees with me. I'm not going to do that.
Look at Japan. I mean, working in a bonsai nursery is like a detention camp sometimes for kids.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
yeah.
But,
I mean, I think the best thing I think that, you know, is just showing your kid that, or knowing them seeing you enjoy your work instead of like, oh God, I have to go to work again. And it's like this horrible office job and you get home and you're exhausted and miserable. Like, being able to see the joy and the creativity, I think will do. I mean, because, you know, Gus is sometimes into it and wants to do some, and sometimes he's just like, whatever. And why is bonsai so boring? But then, like, we have merch, and he's like, I want some of the merch. And it's, you know, it's really funny.
He wants to support. He wants to look cool. Mom does bonsai.
And I will also say that still 11 years in, having him laugh, especially at a joke or something funny that just happens, that's still, like, I think my favorite thing.
The best, right? Yeah.
Like, there's something about that genuine, like, belly laugh that it never gets old. It's always funny.
Yeah, it's been a good time. It's been a really, really good time. Really, you know, it's like I said, it's been hard, but I wouldn't change anything.
Yeah. So for our listeners out there, if you're thinking about being a bonsai person and having a child, I don't know what advice to give right now. Give it a shot.
Good luck.
Give it a shot. Just like maybe like lighten up your collection a lot beforehand.
There you go.
You know.
I gave 10 trees. I gave myself a hard number. It's like I got 40 trees and the ones that I've got in refinement that I'm taking care of, if I could not imagine having any more, and especially with Rory now, there's no way in hell I would have more than that, you know. Like he'll take a nap, I'll go outside and trim like three branches back and kind of look at a tree, go back inside, you know. He'll take a nap, I'll go outside and water the trees.
I'll tell you, like, fully wiring a big tree right now is not in my future. Not happening. that's like a thing of the past. So I'm lucky if I get a few branches wired here and there, and I've had to switch to techniques that maybe aren't the best refinement techniques, whatever's fast, you know. Here's a great one. Okay, I'm sure this is controversial. On a lot of my trees, I've been hedge pruning them, topiary pruning them.
No, yeah. That's fine.
And now
Holy
the reason I do that,
crap, we're gonna get hate mail, Mike. I can't believe you.
Well, the reason I do that too is I know how to fix it. You know, I know that in the next season of ramification, I'll know that I'll take a hit. It won't be as good. And I know that I'll have to clean out a lot of the erroneous cuts and things like that. But the reality is I don't have time to sit there for an hour and prune one tree. Yeah. I don't have that time.
It's that situation of you have to do something, and doing something is better than doing nothing. You know, that's how it is with, I mean, we tell that to our students too. Like, if you get stuck and you don't know what to do, do something, because it's better than not doing anything. So
absolutely.
This brings me back to a conversation that I think me, and you, Carmen, have had in the past. We were at ABS in Denver or something about trees that have like a certain appeal to them because they were trained a certain way for so long, and given the situation of like how they had to be treated, just like how Mike is talking about how he has to hedge prune now, and let's say like because family got in the way, but you still love bonsai and you still maintain your trees, and then because you've trimmed them that way for so long, then that characteristic that you didn't know was going to develop comes into them, like Do you remember that? What I was mentioning, like if it's an, if it's got an old school kind of feel, it's not just that old school feel to it. Does it need to be fixed in a way that reflect the person's life and their journey developing and caring for that tree through their life? That's one of the things I've always wanted.
I think so. I think yes.
It's like it's... your bonsai collection shows your state, your like state, like how you are in life. Like what happened. It's a good roadmap, but also you could reset it and do the whole thing over again.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's kind of my approach is I would just, I'll reset like all these trees when I get more time from the areas that, you know, the poor cuts were made and things like that. But all in all, if I have to, I don't think the trees are going to suffer from it. And if they did, oh, well, you know, the family comes first and that's, you know, you got to do what you got to do. So
here's the thing too, if they're freely growing and you're just kind of trimming and going along, things like nabari and thickening of certain, you know, aspects of the trunks and the branches of some of your trees might happen like under, like right under your eye and you don't even notice it under your nose. You know, that good things could come from that. You know, I've seen old trees with those kind of
there
those
good things.
Yeah.
The reality is like a lot, there's a lot of overhandling in bonsai, like a lot of overhandling. And so what I'll tell you is like Eric Weigert has gotten really good at just distilling it down to what you really need to do, at least for tropical bonsai. And he hedge prunes all the time. And you want to know what? He has the densest ramification I've ever seen on a buttonwood, period. And he goes through and cleans it up every year, you know, and he manages to not use Akadama, and he manages to do all these things that you're told, you know, you shouldn't do. And he's done it for years. And he, again, produces some trees that I have yet to replicate. And, you know, I'm sitting there like pruning branches so specifically to the right node and all that. And he's done in like with 20 of them in that time. And so, again, I'm not saying that's the best technique, but when you're trying to move trees fast, it can work in your favor. Like I said, the buttonwoods he grows are fantastic.
Well, I think it's the follow up care that, you know, it's like when you just hedge prune, that doesn't always work. But when you hedge prune and then you go back in and, you know, make those decisions, that's when it can be. But yeah, I mean, I've seen that done before with, you know, it's a good way to manage a lot of growth all at once when you don't have time.
Right. And that's it. I mean, what I love to like purpose. This is how I love to build trees is I love to cut the middle out, divide to two, and then this is how I usually build is I grow the each branch to equal diameter before I cut them again. So like I usually have a very, I don't have like a dominant leader in the branching. I try to keep everything even and balanced, and I try to be very anal about that. But the reality is now, especially the trees in ramification where it's all twiggy growth, and a lot of that's going to be cut back to the first two internodes or one internode, it's not gonna matter this year. You know, I'll probably take the hit, and next year I'll do better.
And things will come back around again, and then your trees will have an extra ring of growth to kind of show that
they will a real tight ring because I'm keeping them tightly pruned.
There you go. That's how you get that really tight ringed dead wood in there if you ever expose it. So
it's funny, man. I mean, there's a lot of ways to skin this cat, I've learned. So
for the two cat people on the podcast, I'm a dog person, so I'm like, I'm okay with that comment. Anyway, so before we move on to summer dormancy, any closing remarks, or y'all feel pretty
good? Have kids, have bonsai, enjoy.
Yes.
You know, that's
agreed.
It's a great time, and it'll change your life.
Yep. Carmen.
And then we'll all laugh when you do.
Carmen, experienced mom, what do you think?
You can do it.
You can do it.
It's hard.
It is hard. And you'll feel, you know, you'll feel shitty as a parent, and you'll feel shitty as a bonsai artist. And that's just how it's going to be. But then other days you'll have days where you feel great in both aspects, and it's just going to waffle back and forth. And
I actually have a great closing remark about that. Thank you, Carmen.
You're welcome.
I had like four of my best trees that were tanking this year. I had one I thought was absolutely dead, I came back from a trip. It was like fried. It didn't look good. I had repotted it and I thought it was absolutely dead. And my maintenance in my garden had been atrocious. So like I had two olives, looked awful, and we're having a real, took a real bad hit. And I was getting really discouraged. You know, I was like, man, this sucks. How can I be a professional when my garden's looking like this? And so I pulled double duty.
Feel
and
that.
Made sure I worked twice as hard for like a week, maybe 2 weeks. And made sure I got out there and watered them carefully and did what I needed to do and didn't rush. And finally, everything's turning around. And
yay.
So all those, yeah. So, you know, you'll, it's not always as bad as it seems. You know, I'm feeling really good about the garden now. So,
yeah. Yay.
I've talked to some people about that whole thing. It's like, you have a bonsai collection and I'm supposed to have this standard for how I see, you know, my professionalism and stuff like that. And it's like, you have one tree in the garden that looks bad and everything else is just beautiful. You just look right past it. And so, yeah, you,
oh, sure.
You do what you need to kind of tie that up in your own mind, because I mean, you have to feel that way, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's an intrusive thought of saying like, oh, well, if I can't take away this tree, then I'm gonna mess up all these other ones too.
What am I even doing with my life?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so, exactly.
But it'll come back around. That's a good note. That's a good
note. It does come back around. So, you know, sometimes you might just have to like do a little bit, put a little bit extra weight on the teeter totter to get it to go the other direction, you know?
This podcast is supported by Bonsai Bar, the beginner bonsai workshop popping up in breweries all across the Northeast. Bonsai Bar is 2 hours of tiny tree goodness disguised as a night out with friends. Come grab drinks, create a new tree, and watch as your friends and family get the bug for bonsai. Bonsai Bar is always looking for teachers and assistants, and you listen to this podcast, so you're probably already qualified. Bring your knowledge out to the bar. Apply today. Find event tickets, contact info, and more at bonsaibar.com.
So we're going to go into summer dormancy as our secondary topic. So this is something that I've been wanting to dive into, and we could talk more about it later on. I mean, this is kind of what we do on the show, is we kind
of get into it, man. Let's yeah. Chomp right into it.
So yeah, let's get into it. We got some time to talk about it. So I'm gonna go through, you know, kind of just a lead really quick to just kind of give the overarching understanding of what summer dormancy is, or me and Carmen have been talking supposedly is.
That's what I was gonna say.
Yeah, and so Mike's in the same camp. So,
hooray.
So, but it comes down to also, I think, whenever you analyze summer dormancy in bonsai specifically is what we're talking about. Because if you research online, like I was trying to do some research to prep for this a little bit online, I'm like Googling and stuff. I'm just like, look up summer dormancy in plants. And I'm getting all these articles on how to take care of my lawn, how to cut my lawn in the middle of summer. There's not a lot of research in this. There wasn't really any articles that I could find going headlong into like the carbohydrates in the plants slowing down, and you know, a mechanism in the plant.
It's because it's BS.
I studied horticulture for 4 years in school. We never talked about summer dormancy.
Karin, you laughed so loud that your audio peaked and it went out for a second.
Yeah.
So the common rule of thumb for summer dormancy and bonsai, when you hear people preach it, talk about it, is that in the middle of the summer, when it is the most hot, and for Southeast Louisiana, it's reference to when it's 101 degree and 100% humidity, so it feels like 115 degrees. Theoretically, it's all theory, that your trees will be so hot that they will not want to transpire and lose moisture and grow. So they will do what is called a summer dormancy, where they will shut down metabolism or slow it down as if they were in some kind of weird in-between dormancy that they would experience in winter, and that you as a practitioner should water a little bit less and fertilize a little bit less.
That's bad.
This is what I've heard though.
Yeah.
Water a little bit less, regulate water, regulate fertilizer less, and do not trim your trees.
Oh,
at
no.
all.
No, no, no.
Exactly. So,
can I?
It's going to go off the rails. It's going to go off the rails.
You go first, and then I'll do some yelling.
I just want to say, like, this is my take on it. I've read several articles on just plants in general. And yes, mm-hmm. if plants get too hot and they're outside the threshold that they like to grow in, then they do kind of slow down for that period. But that doesn't mean that during the morning or early morning to mid-afternoon, when it is perfect ideal temperatures for them, it doesn't mean that the plants aren't growing. And it doesn't mean that there isn't activity happening in the evening as well. So I think it's, and especially I think the advice given, it goes against the advice that you would want to have in the summer. So I just think, I think it's not accurate reading of the data. Mm-hmm. You know, have I noticed, like, I have noticed when I go away and I put my trees in the shade and I tuck them all in the shade and I lock them in, that they seem to grow faster than when they're out in the full sun. But I attribute that to the fact that the temperature is more ideal for that period of time. Not that it's like this period of months where they shut down and you need to water them carefully or anything like that.
Yeah.
So that's my take on that.
There's also a foliage change, which I think this will go straight into what you're going to say, Carmen, is actually...
Did we lose you? I was like, I'm on pins and needles. It's pins and needles.
I don't think she was paying attention. So if there's a foliage change, it's actually heat stress. You said that earlier. That's why I was bringing it back up.
Yeah.
There you go.
I was waiting for my turn to rant.
No, it was your turn.
Sorry,
I was
saying, go ahead.
And
get him. Get him.
Get him. Okay. So summer dormancy and woody plants is not a thing. However, it is a term we use in bonsai for when trees slow down in the summer. So it's a semantics thing. People call it summer dormancy. Fine. We can call it whatever you want, but it's not actually like a scientifically proven thing that woody plants go dormant in the summer. They don't really.
Nope.
What we're seeing is essentially heat stress. And I mean, there's any plant physiology book is going to go through all of this stuff about how when temperatures and light increase, you know, there's a optimal range for all of this photosynthesis and respiration. And once you pass that temperature range or, you know, the light intensity or the water stress level, all that stuff is going to slow down because the plant is stressed for whatever reason. And so we see that during high temperatures, we see that during periods of drought. And I've seen trees in the yard kind of, you know, shut down. They stop using as much water during really high periods of heat, but that doesn't mean, exactly like Mike said, that they're not working in the morning, that they're not working at night. They need a lot of water in order to stay cool and hydrated and alive during these periods. And so it's one of those things that obviously pushes my buttons because I hate calling something what it isn't.
I agree.
Like, I hate calling it summer dormancy because it's not actually dormancy. It's just heat stress or drought stress or whatever.
And I think that's the problem with how we should be very critical on how we approach data when we're in this hobby, because several times I've been proven and it's been proven that the data is misread, you know? Mm-hmm. So one of the things that's common is like growing buttonwoods in water. You know, people tend to see them growing in the water in nature, and they assume, okay, well, they must love growing in the water. They're growing in it, so they must love that. But surviving is not thriving, you know, surviving something. And they're intertidal species. They're actually one of the four mangrove. They're the ones that grow the furthest out of the water and furthest away from the water. And so the only time you'll see them in the water is during flooding events or like tidal events or anything like that, where they're temporarily submerged. But people always like associate that with the love of water. And the same with bald cypress is bald cypress from all research that I can read or have found is that they tend to grow in swamps, not necessarily because that's their ideal environment, but because that's an area where they're not out competed. So mm-hmm. they've grown certain adaptations to be able to use that environment. But I've always seen that if you pot a bald cypress in like a high spot in your yard and one in a low spot, the one in the high spot's going to grow way better.
Oh, yeah. And it's going to grow really full.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I've always thought of that as like a misinterpretation of the data as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I just think being very critical of how we approach things, like the summer dormancy, yeah, mm-hmm. we are seeing those results that they're worried about, but it's not from the same thing. And like that, yeah. the advice is in contrary to what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah, and this,
go ahead.
I'm just going to rant real quick one more time.
No,
but
go ahead.
Like this kills me as somebody who studied horticulture and plant science that like, there's so much, bonsai is very anecdotal. And, you know, I've heard people say, you don't need to know science or plants to do bonsai. And right, you don't. Does it like to a point, like to, a, you know what I mean? Like
yeah,
to a
yeah.
point, you don't have to understand the biology of a plant to prune a tree, but does it help? Absolutely.
Okay.
And it's like when people go to look for answers to these questions, they forget that like there's an entire discipline of people out there studying plant biology and plant physiology and horticulture and tree sciences and, you know, all this stuff. Like there's people studying this who have these answers. It's not like unknown. It's all right there if you just look yeah. for it or ask and, the right question. And, you know, a lot of it is people don't know what question to ask or whatever because they don't know plants, and that's fine. But like, oh, plant science is a thing.
Yeah. yeah. Like the Scott, end. The company Scott Garden has poured billions of dollars into research on plants, billions
yeah.
of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Like the, it's all there. She's absolutely mm-hmm. right. It's not like this mysterious thing that we're just figuring out. Like there's
right.
tons of research into it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it, I think, you know, kind of going back to summer dormancy as kind of like the take here is that it's a mask. It's like a way to say my tree is heat stressed, like it's changing mm-hmm. color. It might have a little bit of dieback or it's just not growing because the care is not optimized at that time of year.
Mm-hmm.
Don't mean to hurt anybody's feelings out there where they're kind of leaning into that, the way their tree looks. Like, for instance, I have a musk maple, a Primna japonica. I've had it for 4 or 5 years in my collection now. And every
yes.
year, this time of year, it starts yellowing leaves and dropping leaves.
Yep.
And
mm-hmm.
that's heat stress.
It is.
It just doesn't like the summer. It's not dormant. It still grows. But whenever it rains and it cools off and it's like, you know, mid-70s, like around 80,
mm-hmm.
the tree, it extends internodes. They start
yep.
growing mm-hmm. and it starts doing its thing. But if it's 100 degrees, I can't keep that tree happy. It's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry not to interrupt you.
No, you're good, man.
I was going to say, like, standard practice for a lot of nurseries in Japan is come, like, June or late May, they hang shade cloth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything is shade cloth. So it's something that I've been actually trying to do this year. If you guys want to hear a funny story. Is
oh yeah please
yeah, I'm ready to laugh.
Tried to put my shade cloth up and I was like, oh, you know what'll be nice and strong is I'll just hang it to this soffit nail on my roof. I hung the shade cloth to my soffit nail and now my soffit is broken.
Yep.
So
because it's quite windy in Cape Coral,
mm-hmm.
right?
And well, and also you don't realize that the power of wind
Yes.
like it will literally
it will
rip a post
shred.
Out of the ground. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At Underhill, we've had shade cloth, like during a windstorm, if it's too tight, blows it apart. Just shreds it. But if it's loose, it's like a little wind sail. It flaps
right.
around.
Mm-hmm. Now what I need to do, I have to get these little springy turnbuckle things. I don't know. I didn't think it all the way through. So we're going to do version 2 coming up soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and going back to the Primna, that's the Primna japonica, which the Primna microphyllia wouldn't have issues with this kind of thing normally. Like,
mm-hmm.
like
yeah, mine are doing great.
Baking humidity heat is what makes my Primna miserable.
Yeah, no, my mm-hmm. I can't even grow Primna japonica down here because they just cook. If the
yep.
only mm-hmm. time I can grow them is in my lanai, and then they grow leggy and dumb, and so
yeah,
I'm
lucky that they even grow as well as they do for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can grow them, but that's just coming down to I was talking to
we'll just reference Michael Hagedorn for a second, where he's got that Japanese maple in his collection that is actually Jonas's tree. Mm-hmm. And that tree did terribly for Jonas and then had to move it up north a couple hundred miles, and now it's doing great. Mm-hmm. And those are just some of the things you have to consider with that, you know.
Where's Jonas? L.A.?
No, Bay he's area. In the Bay Area.
Yeah.
You can't do Japanese maples there?
Well, I think you can. I think it was...
too humid or something?
A certain type. So,
I think it was... I think it wanted more of a cold period.
I see.
That one did.
Yeah.
And that's... we've had... Fussy. I mean, I know other trees from L.A. that have, you know, had to move north because they don't have the winters that the tree needs. And, you know, there's... We deal with a lot of that with some of the folks who live down south but want northern trees.
That's crazy.
That's another one of the things too is like zone and temperate for some of these trees. Is like, if it didn't have the wind down and the rest that it needed during the winter, and then the summer is brutal, it'll just never catch up. And then if the summer is too hot but then the winter's fine, it's still, there's still going to be a noticeable shift in the tree's health.
Absolutely.
I mean,
but I'm always amazed when I go places and I'm like, what? You can grow Japanese maple here? What? Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, I've had them for 12 years. And I'm like, what? So I just came back from North Georgia, in Atlanta. And like, there's a guy there who had amazing, like, white pines, everything. Ooh, and I'm like, how are you growing this far south?
People's microclimates in their yards are bizarre. Like, you know, I moved an azalea up from a friend's place. I mean, they're just 2 hours south of here, but I guess their microclimate just wasn't working well. And now it's up here and it's thriving. So it's, you know, it's...
I don't get it.
These weird little climactic differences. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's bizarre.
So
I guess we should probably address, though, that, like, okay, so the term summer dormancy may be a misnomer for what's actually happening, but okay, yes, our trees are slowing down or not respiring or photosynthesizing or moving water as quickly as they normally do during, you know, peaks in the summertime. So that is a real thing you're witnessing. It's not, that's not fake. I think we just kind of have a misnomer for it. And maybe we should talk a little bit more about what we need to do.
And I think, you know, the proper care, I think you still, you don't want them not being pruned because you're only going to use even more water if the thing extends twice as big as it was, you know?
Yeah.
So then you're just using even more and more water. I still think, I mean, we still treat the trees, if they're growing, we prune them, you know? Yep. So
same. What we'll do if we, especially, you know, in the summertime here, it's pretty arid. And even if it's not, you know, above 90s, a lot of times we're still in mid 80s or low 90s. But if we're doing any kind of pruning on deciduous, even a lot of juniper work, we'll throw the trees into the greenhouse. I mean, we'll gently set them, into the greenhouse, which is shaded. And, you know, the humidity's higher for, you know, a week or two, just so they can have a little break. So that we're not putting them directly back out in that intense heat, which could really damage them once they've been worked on.
Yeah,
so we're giving them a little extra care. So we don't stop work, but we take into consideration what is happening outside and then, you know, act accordingly to make sure that the tree's going to have the best care possible. So.
Absolutely. But, you know, we deal with it here, and the shade cloth, I think, is a great idea because you can go to different, you can find different levels of shade. So you can do 30%, 40%. Or whatnot, and so you don't get the same effects as like a lanai. Like I bring a lot of stuff into my lanai, and it's like very shaded, and so unfortunately, a lot of the material grows terribly. You know, it grows like long internodes, big weird leaves, and stuff like that. So, so there is like a happy balance, but yeah, you just get through summer. Summer kind of sucks, but. You get through it, and then we get to fall, and fall's usually pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. I love fall. Fall's good wind down, and you get everything's changing colors, and you get some late growth.
I don't get that. I don't get any change of colors.
I'm sorry, Mike. I had to bring it up.
Yeah.
No.
But I hate the grow season. I just want to say I used to like it, but now that you know it's so crazy busy and everything, and
yeah,
it
changes everything.
I like the time. Like there will be a time mm-hmm. in fall and a time in spring where everything's growing like way slower, mm-hmm. and I love that time. I love it.
I love the color change and then the spring when everything's slow and everything's taking its time to emerge mm-hmm. like new leaves and it looks really pretty and small, different little mm-hmm. colors there. Yeah, but yeah, summer.
Summer's the worst.
Yeah. So you heard it from the little things. Summer dormancy is not really a thing. It's just the way you treat the trees in the summer is.
I mean,
be...
it's real for turf, but
yeah.
not for.
Oh
bonsai.
Yeah, don't cut, don't scalp your grass in the summer. That's going to be my recommendation. Let it grow about 4 inches and then like adjust your blade height to about 2. Now, like,
unless you have a Florida weed lawn, you know, they'll handle it. They'll just let you just hammer
if you're irrigating
it.
Every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's another rant about lawns and how unnecessary they are. But anyway, I digress.
So, yeah.
I want to put in a seashell lawn.
I mean, you guys sure. like the opposite of a desert lawn with rocks, just a seashell mm-hmm. lawn instead.
I just want seashells. That's what Eric has as his ground cover around Ooh. His collection is like crushed shell.
I was about Oof. To say, Eric doesn't really have a lawn. He's just got a bonsai collection.
No, it's just in that crushed shell. Oh my God. You want to talk about reflecting heat.
Yeah.
I don't know, anything that I can't walk barefoot on, I'm not really a fan of. Like I don't like shoes in the summer, and walking on crushed shell sounds awful. I mean, the gravel out here, I can't go barefoot back here either, which is probably for the best. But
yeah, because you're from Michigan, and I found out that Michigan is like the Holy Land.
Oh,
like there's mm-hmm. no fire ants, there's no sharks, there's no alligators, there's no.
We have
like,
one poisonous snake, but it is very shy and will only bite you if you pick it up, and it's in very small pockets of places to be. Oh yeah, that's right. You were in Michigan. Yeah. Do you love Michigan?
Yeah. It's pretty awesome. See? Yeah,
it's
I went
great.
All over Michigan too.
You
I went,
saw my collection. Well, it's not my collection.
I did.
You saw
I
the
did.
Collection.
The collection.
Yeah, it was awesome. I went.
Yay.
I went from Traverse City, got my rental. So I went from Grayling to Traverse City, got my rental car, went to Ann Arbor, then mm-hmm. went to Detroit and flew to the UP. So
wow,
it was awesome.
Michigan's a great state. I'm
it
not
really
gonna
was.
Not gonna lie. And now you can use your hand to point up where
can.
All the
I'm
all
like,
the places
been all
you've been.
Here.
I've been here, 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 here. Mm-hmm.
And then I do this. I go up here and I go up here.
Mm-hmm. That's how you can tell somebody's from Michigan. They'll point to their hand to tell you where they live.
Pretty awesome. Yeah. I'm hoping to go back maybe in, I don't know, November or something. We'll see. I have
let me know because I'll be back by then.
Yeah. Okay, cool. That'd be awesome. Permanently?
You know,
yeah, we're moving. Sweet. My house is like half packed up right now where we need to hear about a rental. Yeah.
Oh, how cool. Wow. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. It's not stressful at all.
No, yeah, I hate moving more than anything. So, that's so great.
When people point to where they're from in Louisiana, they point at their foot.
Oh, that's right.
That's
right. We got the hand and the foot.
You know, Florida, people in Florida, they point to their...
Mike, stop. No.
I'm just
Our
kidding.
Whenever
just
I made
changed.
That joke, I was like, oh, wait. No, that's funny. I like that. It does just kind of hang off of the end of America, but we're going to go ahead and come to a close.
Oh, that's a fun part of parenting. Wait till you get there.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait.
I've got a little boy. I know what's going on. So, anyway, so yeah, that was parenting 101 with Bonsai Intrigated. So glad you guys sat through that. There will be a test next week, and then of course summer dormancy, the do's and don'ts of how summer dormancy doesn't exist and how to kind of go
gonna
about.
Get, everybody's gonna, get, gonna freak out.
Like, I know.
So much,
I know.
So much
that's
controversial.
All right.
Stuff.
That's all right. You know what? Yeah. Let them freak out. Let them come.
I mean,
I stand by what I said.
We're getting like upwards of like 100 episode. Like we're almost at. You know, we're getting really far into this. There's got
to
be something out there.
It's to the point where it doesn't matter what we say, right? No.
Oh, we got to have like Shinji Suzuki on for the 100th or something.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That would be badass. Cool.
Or we'll just do even more hot takes because I was real riled up before we started and I've calmed down. So
I do like hot takes. I do think that's when it's most fun.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to get you on for the next one, Mike, where we just do other hot take episode. We said some spicy stuff, and no one said anything back to us on that.
I don't think it was that hot. I think we gotta get hotter.
Oh, okay.
Oh, mm-hmm. We can spice it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought some dormancy was pretty hot. If you
this
know
one's,
what I mean.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah. So anyway.
And we even talked about hedge pruning too.
Oh yeah. Boy! Right. Yeah. And when it's acceptable.
Yeah. Oof. But we're gonna get some heat.
I'm gonna wrap us up here if you guys don't mind, and because we're running a little long, but also I've got like a really funny, not funny, man, I ruined it. I was gonna say I've got a dad joke kind of thing.
Go ahead.
We forgot about the dad jokes.
I heard this one from Mr. Bill Butler at the Louisiana Day of Bonsai the other day. If you can imagine, it's safe for work, so don't worry. So Bill was telling me, he's like, if you're putting together a Brazilian rain tree forest, he said, you know what the best thing about Brazilian rain tree is?
What?
You don't really need to count how many trees are in your forest because there's a bazillion of them.
That's pretty funny. There you go. Yeah, there's a Brazilian of them.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
I had to throw that joke in there because I was like, unbelievable. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was good. I like that. Hey, it made me laugh.
Where do you find a cow with no legs?
Where?
Right where you left it.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Oh my God. All right. Everybody's clicking off now. Everybody's like shutting down their Spotify's. They're like deleting
it's
their
over.
Accounts.
Unsubscribe.
Yeah. Unsubscribe from like everything, YouTube and Spotify. Anyway. So I'm going to go ahead and name off our Patreon list here. And then we're going to say goodbye to everybody. But before I do that, of course, here is the patron list. I had to update it because we've had fluctuation in the patrons and the Bonsai Best Buds. For those who have left us, thank you for supporting. No hard feelings. We love you guys. Thank you for helping us chug along here. For our new listeners and our new supporters, you're awesome. I mean, we love you guys. We love all of you guys that listen to us. So don't think you have to pay the little things to make the little things happy. We're happy doing what we're doing. Thank you. No, here is the patron list. In no particular order, by the way, I just updated it. Wallace Woods Pottery, Bonsai Samurai, Radstron Studio, Kyle Ford, Wesley Thompson, Joseph Dominguez. What was that?
I was going to look at it.
Oh, say, okay. David Smith, Eddie Fernandez, Dale.
Dale.
Yeah, I put him a little bit closer.
Sorry.
Myrick Bonsai Pottery, Chantel Wynn, Hist Warrior, Christina Carforia.
Yeah.
Yep. David J. Beccaccini, Gilbert Jerez, Sean Seaman, Varies Bonsai, J.M. Stewart Woodworking, Joshua Roth Limited, Nancy Hoffman, Nate Murray, Ben Crean, Victrina Ridgway, Tim Arsenal, Chris Fossoon, J.A.S. Potts, Bonsai Marine, A.C. Castle, Luis Torres, Karen Codswell, Austin Atkins, David N., Chase, Taylor Peacock, Greenwich Gardens, Backyard Bonsai Australia, Justin Knight, Joel Jenkins, Ryan Gargando, oh my God, I butchered it, gonna keep going, Snappy Chappers, Joshua Bentley, Ricky Ruins, Boyd Snellgrove, and Vicky Off. Because I said everything basically backwards, I just threw a monkey wrench in the whole thing. Specimen Best Buds, Anrai UN, Bill Butler, the anchor Specimen Best Bud, Bill Butler of Bill's Bayou. Thank you so much, guys, for supporting. Yes, look, yeah, give them the red carpet, the whole thing, yeah. But thank you guys so much for supporting, and we will wrap it up here. We'll talk to you guys next week. Appreciate you guys listening. Our shout outs that we always do too. If you want to check out anything that I have done, if I sound interesting at all, my name is Evan Pardee. You go over to andrewhillbonsai.com. You can go look at articles that I wrote. They're really interesting. I swear. I work really hard on writing them. I take a lot of photos. You can go over to my gallery page, see some cool trees that I made. I am the nursery manager at Underhill Bonsai in Folsom, Louisiana. And also, just support. And then for Mike, where can they check out your stuff?
Facebook, Instagram, and our website, kitsunebonsai.com. And we have a full like program list, merch, things like that. And you can also catch me in a town by you.
Coming soon.
I don't know. I hope. I'm hoping.
Well, yeah, you've been a lot of places recently.
Talk
so
to your local bonsai representatives.
And then for Carmen, where can they see your stuff at?
You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Becoming Bonsai. And be sure to check out the Purple Pot Society, the National Women's Bonsai Group that works on educating and inspiring women in bonsai. I will be at the Pacific Expo this fall doing some demo work, and got some cool stuff lined up for next year that I can't quite talk about yet.
Spoilers. Not yet. So we'll get there. We'll get there. Awesome.
All right. Sweet.
Well, thanks for hanging out with us.
Yeah, thank you guys.
And the little things will be back next week. You guys have a great week.
All right. You too. I'll talk to you guys later.